the Nick DiGilio Show on Radio 720. WGN, I'm Matt Bubala, filling in for Nick for the next couple of nights as he takes some well-earned vacation time. You hear the Bears fight song there. You know, I went to the Bears game today, took my three boys to their first ever Bears game, and the Bears scored points while we were there, and then they sing the song after every time the Bears score the points. I'm guessing on a season where the Bears are 6-3 instead of 3-6 and haven't won a game at home at all, the singing is a little louder. But it was sort of a, nobody was like, yeah, this is the Bears and we're winning. Nobody was, people were like, it's the Vikings and we're winning finally. It was very half, a little bit half-assed, everybody. So let's pick it up a little bit if we're going to cheer the Bears on. But at least we didn't hear, I warned the boys as we got there. I said, you know, you might hear a lot of booing today. If it doesn't go our way, there's going to be a lot of booing. And luckily we were there late enough to miss the 10 points that the Bears gave up to start the game. And so we heard a lot of cheering. Joining us on the phone right now is Dr. Jim Taylor. He's an internationally recognized authority on the psychology of performance in business, sports, and parenting. Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Matt. Glad to be here.
So, I know that you're out in San Francisco. You're not following Chicago sports. In fact, you Giants win another World Series. I don't know how well you follow sports at all, but you guys have been pretty successful out there recently. The 49ers have been good. I know they're having trouble this year, but overall things are pretty good. People have a healthy relationship more so, I imagine, in San Francisco than they do in Chicago with their sporting teams.
Well, I do follow sports very intently because it's a big part of my work. And, yeah, San Francisco's done pretty well. But I also follow Chicago sports because, you know, Chicago fans are about as diehard as you can get.
Yeah, they are. And it's well-earned. So we've got a lot of interesting things going on with our teams. Let's start with the Bears because they are the big talk of the town right now, and it's Bears season, and this is a Bears town no matter what else happens, really. And they've had such an interesting year, and I really want you to talk to me a little bit about our relationship with our coach. So Mark Trestman is our coach here, and he hasn't been a big-time NFL coach before, and he's most famous for winning championships in the Canadian Football League. And just today, I'm at the Bears game, and they run some bad play that doesn't go well, and I hear some guy go, that might work in the Canadian Football League, but it doesn't work here! And, you know, everybody, because we're not winning, everybody's down on this coach, and there's not enough fire in his belly. People get very upset that after we lose, he's not showing emotion. He's not freaking out about what happened. He's just like, you know, we got to work on this in practice, and we've got to do better. And he'll say things like that, but he doesn't get all fired up. And people still love the era of the 80s with Ditka screaming at people and cursing people out and yanking them on the sidelines. And now we have this mild-mannered, gentle guy who looks like he didn't even play football. He's so tiny. And the psychology of it is we get very upset about it. Is there any rationale between a coach who's fired up all the time and a guy who's just more methodical? Does it matter at all?
Well, it doesn't matter in many ways because the fact is there are many different leadership styles. There are coaches or business executives who are like a Ditka, very fiery, and or like a Belichick, but there are also some that are very thoughtful, very methodical, and sort of very cerebral. And both can work, but it really depends upon the culture and the makeup of the team. And so, you know, for me, coaches and team success is about just like real estate, location, location, location. For teams, it's selection, selection, selection. And that goes for not only the players who are working under a coach, but also the coach itself. So I think the key here is what is his leadership style and whether that fits in with the Bears culture at present and certainly historically.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's hard to say what the Bears culture is because they've been a, you know, smash mouth football team in the past, but the leadership now in the front offices is not that way. It's been for a long time since George Halas passed away and his kids and grandchildren have come on to run the team. People complain that it's not really football people making these decisions and the people they hire. And it, you know, the Bears are very much about it, I would say traditionally about character, and they are concerned about image and the players and things like that. But they've lost a lot of the toughness, I would say, that was with the team in the earlier years. And that's just more of their style these days. And the Bears also have a reputation for being stingy with a dollar, so a coach won't get fired that quickly because they're not going to pay out that contract. So I would say he seems to fit in line with the management style right now, but it doesn't necessarily fit in with the fans and what the fans would like to see.
Well, unfortunately, the fans don't run the football team, and there's always going to be conflicts in that way. Historically, again, fans in Chicago like the fire, the intensity, but one can't lead in a way that one isn't as a person. And so I'm not sure I could see Trestman being that fiery guy. And does that mean he can't be effective? Absolutely not. But the fact is this notion that, well, the Bears, the players, they're professionals, so they should just do their job. But realistically, we are pack animals, and we need alphas. We need people to lead us, to direct us. That's the way it is in any kind of group. And so it might very well be that there's just a mismatch between between the coach and the players. And then it's up to management, who, like you say, are not necessarily quote-unquote football people, who are taking the team in a certain direction that the fans aren't happy with. And let's be realistic. I mean, Trestman had a lot of success up in Canada, but as we all know, and no insult to Canadians, they're very nice people. And so it's a different culture up there, generally, than down here in the U.S., and especially in Chicago. So it was thought, given to whether there was a good cultural fit, a good leadership fit with the Bears, I can't say, but there certainly doesn't look like it. But at the same time, let's keep in mind that he has obviously demonstrated himself to be a very capable football coach, but whether that translates into success in the NFL, well, we know many coaches who came out of college, who came from other places, and did not succeed at the NFL level.
Well, you know, it's interesting because so here on our radio station, we have 2.5 Bears postgame and pregame and stuff like that. So Dan Hampton, Glenn Keselowski, former Bears, and I'm driving home today listening to them after the game, and you would have thought we got killed. I mean, they're still so upset because, oh, it's the Vikings and they stink and look at all these mistakes we make, and they are so all over Trestman and his lack of aggressive leadership style. Is football a sport? Does it make any difference between sports? Because football seems to be a sport where, you know, there would be a concern among fans that the players, there's talk about if the players quit on him or are not playing as hard, but there's also a feeling that the players have taken advantage of him, that it's soft practices. Lance Briggs, one of our, you know, stalwart defenders, took time off to go open a restaurant before the season started when he should have been preparing for a game before the opening game of the season. There's a lot of these little things that people feel like he's just getting run over by these guys. And part of that seems to be, you know, you don't have so there's still coaches like Jim Harbaugh who seem to have success getting very much in people's faces, getting aggressive, getting loud. Is football a sport with a culture where maybe the Trestman style is really tough to you know, I know winning cures everything. So if they're winning, people will be like, wow, the new mild-mannered coach, this is the new face of the NFL. But when it's not working, you start thinking, wow, do you need, because there's been talk about maybe Jim Harbaugh will be here coaching the Bears next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly football is a very intense sport and a very aggressive sport, not necessarily in terms of hurting people, but people get hurt. And that kind of energy that football players have to muster on the field has to come from higher up, from the coach, and also, of course, from the quarterback, the other de facto leader on a football team. And as we know, Cutler has not necessarily presented himself as a strong, competent leader that conveys, hey, I can win, I can carry you guys, let's go out and kick some butt. And so I think there's two places there where leadership may be, if not lacking, at least not of a style that's a best fit for the Bears. But Matt, let me interject one more thing. There's actually a third leader that I think is often ignored, and those are the fans. And because think about it, when it's very easy to cheer for a team when they're winning. But you know what? The players and the coaches don't need that support when they're winning. They need that support when they're not winning. And yet, what's the natural response when a team isn't doing well? Two things. One, silence. When the team's behind, they need to be cheered on more than ever because they need to get going, and fans do have that effect. And the second is to just deride and the players and the coaches and call them names and get down on their case. And that makes the fans feel better, perhaps, because they're angry, but it doesn't help the players and the coaches.
Well, that's interesting. Let's get into that after the news. We're speaking with Dr. Jim Taylor. He is a internationally recognized authority on psychology on the psychology of performance in business, sports, and parenting. His website is drjimtaylor.com, drjimtaylor.com. I want to talk more about Cutler as a leader, but also about the fans, because the players get upset with the fans when they're getting on them. And we've had some famous comments about the fans can eat dirt this year with the Bears. Let's talk about that after the news next. Matt Bubala in for Nick DiGilio here on Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Nick DiGilio here on Radio 720 WGN. Hey, check out the archives here. A 2005 conversation between Francis Cardinal George and Milt Rosenberg at WGNradio.com. Right now we're speaking with Dr. Jim Taylor, an expert on the psychology of sports and parenting and business. Of course, we're talking sports with him. Dr. Taylor, when we were going to the break, you were talking a little bit about, I want to get into the fans and their reaction, but Jay Cutler gets a lot of heat for his body language, for his sneering, for his appearance, for his reactions on the field. He is not your prototypical Tom Brady or Peyton Manning type quarterback leader where it's really him leading the team and carrying it on his shoulders. He's just a different type of guy. And it's funny because it really should just be the performance on the field that matters, right? But when it goes wrong, can the way that those guys lead really carry over to the rest of the team and hurt the rest of the team, even if it's not about the way they're throwing the ball?
Well, absolutely, because the quarterback is more than just the quarterback, a guy who throws the ball or passes the ball off. It's the guy who leads the team in the huddle, calling the plays, and he's looked to for attitude, for confidence, for responding to adversity and challenges like being behind. And so the messages that he sends to his players have a real effect on the players. And so, again, use examples of Manning and Brady, who always present calm, cool, but also some fire when needed, always positive, or really angry in, come on, guys, let's fight here. Whereas Cutler, he's got a sort of a passiveness to him, a lack of stepping up, saying, I'm in charge here. And when his players see that, it's hard not to be affected because they look to him for that leadership.
They really do look to him for the leadership, and the fans do as well, and they just don't seem to get it. He seems to be a bit of a, I don't want to say a bandwagon jumper, but when things are going great, Cutler's really great. And then when things are down, I mean, I like seeing that he's frustrated and things like that because you want him to care, and you know he really does care, and he's a tough guy. I mean, he takes a lot of hits, throws his body in there. It's certainly nothing about that, but it's just frustrating as the fan, for the fans. Now, let's talk about the fans because you were saying, and it makes sense, that listen, when the team's down, that's when they need you to be cheering, to be trying to get them back in a game, to get them riled back up. And what happens in any stadium is when your team gets down, you get quiet, you start getting upset, and there have been times the fans have been booing the Bears headed into the locker room at halftime. And earlier this year, I think it was Lamar Houston said the fans can eat dirt because he was all upset that they were getting booed. You're paying a lot of money for the tickets to go to NFL games, especially. We were up in the 400 level. Those tickets were $100 a piece. People down lower are paying through their nose to go to these games. So you feel you have a right to express a little displeasure with the way your team is performing. How much does it matter if the fans are getting on the players or not?
Well, it's nothing different from any other team all over the country when players are losing. But I think there's a degree of intensity because of the passions that Bears fans bring to the game. Do they have a right to express themselves? Hey, it's a free country. But I think fans don't often realize that the players, as tough and big and strong as they might be, I mean, they're human beings. And when they're getting booed, when they're hearing silence, that affects them at a subtle level and sometimes at a not-so-subtle level. And the fact is, the level of play in the NFL, I mean, the Bears are having a relatively subpar season now, but they're still all phenomenal football players, phenomenal athletes, and human beings with feelings. And I don't want to give this impression that, you know, that the players in the locker room are crying.
You're going to get booed here, Dr. Taylor. If you give, oh, they're humans too, you know.
I know. Be nice to them. That's not what Bears fans want to hear.
No.
But realistically, they are human, and they are affected by the messages they get from their coach, from their quarterback, and from their fans. Now, should they be able to just suck it up and step it up? Well, in an ideal world, yes, but we don't live in an ideal world. You know, these are human beings, and they are trying to do the best they can, and things don't always work out, and the NFL has its ups and downs. And, you know, one thing I really appreciate about Chicago fans, and I think we might get to this when we talk about the Cubs, is that they hang in and that they keep they keep being the fans through thick and thin. And so it's a tough one, that balance between being supportive when their team is down and being frustrated because their team is down.
Well, those are really apples and oranges in my mind because, yeah, you know, the Cubs fans keep showing up. It's also Wrigley, and listen, I'm a diehard bleeding blue Cubs fan, have been my whole life, and I get more upset than anyone when my Sox fan friends go, "It's a beer garden, you don't even watch the game." Cub fans boo, too, or don't show up. I mean, the Cubs have drawn a ton less people. There's been a lot less interest since they've been bad. But there's also so many more. You know, there's 10 times as many home games as the Bears have, so it's a big difference. So it's not quite the same. But you know what? You know what would, if Jay Cutler, after a game, and they said, "Well, the fans are booing, what do you think about that?" Instead of these players getting upset about it, would say, "You know what? I would boo, too. We sucked out there, and it's terrible, and it's unacceptable, and those people are paying good money, and I don't blame them because we should be better than this." That's all he or Brandon Marshall or Lamar Houston, anybody has to say to get the fans right back on their side. They would love that blue collar, "You know what? We stunk out there today, and it's embarrassing, and it shouldn't have happened." But they don't do stuff like that. And you know, when you say, "Well, they have feelings too, you know, you got to help them out," I want them to say, "No, boy, those fans are booing us. Guys, let's go out and win them back. Come on, let's do this for the," you know, something like that. I understand that, you know, you do want to get picked up. We're all human. But we do look at it as they're making $100 million. They're making so much money. Us booing is not hurting them. They're doing just fine. Play better!
Yeah, and I certainly agree at a realistic level. And I think the key is that the players need to own it. And they're the ones out on the field. They may be trying hard, but it's not always working out. And they need to say, "Look, we do need to step it up. You know, we are in a business here, and we're entertainers, and we are here because of our fans. And we need to step it up." I think that is going back to the whole thing in terms of Cutler's body language and Trestman's low-key style, is that fans want to see some fight. And it's almost not necessarily that they don't win, because they're not going to win everything, but fans want to see their team, which they're supporting with heart, mind, body, money, and everything, being frustrated and saying, "Look, this stinks, and we're going to do our best to kick it up here, and we owe that to our fans." And I think more than anything, that's what Chicago fans want, is they want to see some fight in the dog. And if they see the fight in the dog, then they're going to get behind the dog.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's some personalities in leadership roles that don't demonstrate, whether it's inside there or not. I'm going to guess Cutler and Trestman have that. But it's not demonstrated, and if it's not demonstrated, then the fans don't see it, and they think other things.
Texter from 606 says, "Barney Rubble would be a better QB than Cutler." Boy, what a cut down that is. You're bringing Barney Rubble up. And Barney Rubble would be a terrible quarterback. I mean, look at how short Barney Rubble was. He'd be a terrible quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, these comments, unfortunately, are from fans who care deeply and want to win. And is Cutler the best quarterback around? No. Is he capable quarterback? He can be.
Well, that's, and you know what, Dr. Taylor, let me stop you right there, because that is a big thing here in Chicago. He can be. He's got all the tools. He's such a good athlete. He throws the ball so hard. If we could just work on the mechanics, he's a work in progress. He's been in the league forever at this point, and people are getting really fed up with the promise of what Jay Cutler could be. And he got, you know, he's the highest paid player in the game right now because of the brand new quarterback contract this year. At least he's the highest paid player in the game for this year. He signed the $100 million, you know, contract, $54 million guaranteed. He's making the money of a superstar. And it's always with the promise of who he's going to be. At this point in his career, with any athlete, can we expect somebody to really develop into something else? Can they really, you know, with the right coaching, with the right people, can they really change somebody this late in the game? Or is it, you know, this is kind of who you have. You got to put the right people around him, call the right plays, and hope for the best. Or can we really expect that a guy like Jay, this far into his career, already gotten the big contract, is going to do all the little things that people tell him he needs to do?
Well, certainly being a great quarterback goes beyond just good mechanics and good play calling and so on. It is being a leader. And I can't look into a crystal ball and say he just doesn't have it. But at the same time, I would say that at this point, as you suggest, in his career, we're not going to see any major changes because, you know, we are who we are. And one cannot make major personality changes at this point in somebody's career. And so I would say, yes, okay, I'm going to make a prediction here. Probably not the quarterback that that people dream of and probably never will be. And I think the real unfortunate thing is that he's being paid, and it's not just hope or promise, it's expectation. When someone's being paid that much money, we expect them to play like that kind of money. And he hasn't demonstrated it to this point. And, you know, I'm going to look in my crystal ball, okay, and say probably not going to happen.
You brought up the Chicago Cubs just a minute ago. When we come back, I want to ask you, because we just made a big managerial change. So we're talking all about leadership and what that means. Let's talk about the Chicago Cubs next and whether or not they can lead and the leadership can truly make a difference. Rick Renteria did a nice job with these young guys this year. But the Cubs said, no, you know what? This guy's available. He's been a winner in the past. Hasn't won a World Series, but he's led a pretty financially strapped team all the way to the World Series. Can Joe Maddon make a big difference? We'll ask Dr. Jim Taylor next. He's with us here on Radio 720 WGN. You can visit him at drjimtaylor.com, drjimtaylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R.com. Matt Bubalin for Nick DiCiglio here on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Dr. Jim Taylor about athletes and the psychology of the athletes thinking and performing and us booing them and all of those good things. And when we were going to the break, we started talking a little bit, Dr. Taylor, about the Cubs. So the Cubs hired a new manager last year. He had 1 year behind the helm. He wasn't their first choice. They were going after Joe Girardi, but he re-signed with the Yankees. So the Cubs hire a guy named Rick Renteria, and he handles the Cubs this past year. And they actually had a better season. They had a bunch of young guys come up who actually did pretty well. People were relatively happy. It was okay. We're moving forward. All these new players are coming. Then Joe Maddon resigns from the Tampa Bay Rays and suddenly becomes available. And we jump on the chance and we sign him. How, you know, and I heard a lot of discussion on the sports talk shows about managers and how much they make a difference or not. Overall, people, I think, are very excited about this hiring. But there's a lot of people saying the manager really doesn't make that much of a difference. When it comes to a sport like baseball that's so slow and so not about being angry and hitting people hard, how much does the mental and leadership aspect of a manager, do you think, play into things?
Well, it plays to some degree, but I think less so than certainly football or basketball, because baseball is fundamentally an individual sport played on the field. Yes, there are certain situations where the players work together to score or to stop a play defensively, but fundamentally it's an individual sport, hitter, pitcher, hitter, fielder, and so on. And so I think it has less an impact, and I think that there have been some very successful teams without, in my view, the greatest managers. So I think that if you've got good players who play consistently well and stay healthy, that's really the biggest part of success in baseball.
Well, how come some managers do, or some coaches do so much winning, whether it's Phil Jackson in basketball or certain guys in baseball? I mean, it is funny because they talk about Phil Jackson being such a great coach. Look at all the championships he's won. But he won championships with Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, right? You know, when you look at some of the greatest coaches of all time and who we laud as being these incredible leaders, they generally had incredible players. You don't ever hear the story about the guy that led an awful team of players to championship year after year, right?
Yeah, and that goes back to my initial point about selection. If you surround yourself with great players, you're going to look pretty good. And there, I suppose, over the years have been exceptions of great teams that didn't play up to its ability. But certainly, baseball is a fickle sport where 1 year a team can go, 80 and whatever the math is, and 80 and 80 something, and the next year can go into the playoffs. And it's a matter of players are on their game, and it could be just a couple of really strong players that carry a team, like a great pitcher, and whether they stay injury free. So, great managers have failed because they didn't have the right players, and not the greatest managers have succeeded because they had great players. And I think the key, though, is that that being able to manage a bunch of good players also does play a role, and leadership does play a role to some degree, but I would say less so in baseball than in some of the other major pro sports.
You know, it'll be interesting with Joe Maddon, because he's moving from the American League to the National League, and I believe there's a lot more pressure on the managers in the National League because there is no designated hitter in the American League. You're kind of filling out a lineup and they go play, but here you really have these different matchups that you bring in relievers in different ways and pinch hitters because of that. And so I think that will be interesting. But Maddon is famous for trying to keep it light in the clubhouse. You know, baseball is such a long season, and it's such a grind. and you're playing night after night after night. And he did funny things like bringing a boa constrictor in to the clubhouse, and he does all these things when they're in losing streaks. He brought on a bottle of whiskey to a plane and said, "Let's toast to the best 0-5 team ever to start a baseball season," and different things like that. He seems to try to lighten the mood a lot, or just keep things on a even keel for the guys. Is in baseball, I imagine that's a big part of the leadership, is just managing that long grind of a season for the guys.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, going over 162 games plus playoffs, that can just wear on players, because away from home and constantly being under the microscope, not just once a week but multiple times a week, that's really difficult. And I think levity, humor, providing a little relief is a really healthy thing. And I think Madden has shown that he can do that. Of course, it doesn't always work, because none of these little things, they seem like these magical coaching or managerial techniques, but we only notice them when they work. And there are all the times when they don't, and you just don't hear about it because they didn't work. And, you know, ultimately a lot of these things, they don't really work, in that they're great stories, they're great narratives. But, you know, bringing the boa constrictor, did that, you know, turn the team around? I'm going to say not. But people, because maybe the next day they won, they go, "Oh, the boa constrictor was the thing." And so I think a lot of these strategies can be overrated. While at the same time, in the pressure and the grind of a long season, lightening things up can certainly help players get through it and be happier and healthier and play better.
You talk about the things that managers do that don't necessarily work, and we don't hear much about it, but you had a pretty famous incident out there with a famous ex-Chicago Bear, right, at the San Francisco 49ers. Mike Singletary was the coach, and I forget the exact story, but at halftime or at the end of a game or something, where I think the team wasn't doing well, he dropped his pants as he was yelling at the team. I forget what exactly it was, but he drops his pants during this tirade, and it really played against him in the media and with the team out there, and he was gone soon thereafter. And the way it was spun is, you know, Singletary out of control, things like that. So once in a while, there's things that do make the headlines, right? But it's not for the right reason.
Right. Obviously, it was very dramatic, but did it change the team? No. I mean, ultimately, it's sort of interesting in talking about guys, you know, great coaches over the years, like Phil Jackson, is they think he goes in at halftime and gives the inspirational speech, or a Mike Krzyzewski, or Joe Torre, and that's what makes him great. But that's not what makes him great. It's their ability to motivate the players day in and day out, in practice, in the tough games, when they're tired, when they're beat up. That's what makes the great players great. So the media picks up on these dramatic little stories because it makes great copy, but their effect on play in these singular events, probably pretty minimal. It's the overall message, the support, the drive, the messages that the manager/coach is sending that really makes a difference over time.
We have to let you go here in a minute, but one last quick comment I need from you. A texter from the 312 asks for your thoughts on Derrick Rose. After going through two near-career impacting injuries, can he recover mentally despite the recurring minor injuries? Now, Derrick Rose had ACLs in back-to-back seasons that knocked him out. And then this year, he's already sprained his ankle. He's had a hamstring. And so he sat out a lot of games, and he made a public comment, and they were asking him about it. And he said, "Listen, you know, when I sit out, I'm thinking about the future. I don't want to be sore at my son's graduation. I don't want to be sitting in business meetings, you know, thinking about my sore knees." So it really struck the wrong tone with fans, and it was just kind of, you know, shake your head at him. "Dude, you're making $100 million. People that are slaving away for $35,000 a year working, you know, real backbreaking jobs don't want to hear you worried about your business meetings in the future. They want you to go out and play and say, 'I play through pain, da 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 da.'" How tough is it mentally when players have had injuries like that, and where clearly they're starting to think about those things?
Without a doubt. And first, what Rose said was just highly impolitic. It was not a good thing to say. But there are two issues for me. One is, yes, it's incredibly hard to come back from major injuries, especially multiple ones, because these days the surgical and rehabilitative technology is so sophisticated that athletes can come back from 15, 20 years ago were catastrophic career-ending injuries, and so they can come back physically, but rarely is the attention given to the psychological return, and so it can certainly cause them to lose confidence, to have doubts that their body can work. The fact that he's had recurring minor injuries tells me that there is a tentativeness or perhaps some compensatory injuries where the body tries to protect the former major injury. And so, but at the same time, a player has to know how their body is, and a player he's a prideful guy in the good sense, and he wants to play his best, and he doesn't want to come back unless he's fully able to contribute. So there's that side of it. The other side of it is that the fans don't know what's going on inside of him. They can't read his mind. They don't know how his body feels. And so is it fair for them to get on his case in this way? I mean, it's natural and expected, but is it fair? I don't know. The guy has had some serious physical struggles. And to call him weak-minded or soft just because he doesn't want to come back until he's really ready, he feels he's ready, his physician and his PT says he's ready, that's a tough call. You know, only Derrick Rose can make that call because he's the only one in his own mind and in his own body.
Yeah, I don't think he needs a new doctor or a new PT or new anything. All he needs is a new PR person because they would have advised him not to phrase those comments that way. Dr. Jim Taylor, drjimtaylor.com. That's drjimtaylor.com. He's been a consultant for the U.S. and Japanese ski teams, United States Tennis Association. Lots of interesting stuff on the website. We really appreciate you spending the hour with us and trying to let us all lay on the couch here and share our woes with you so we can survive another Chicago sports season. Thank you so much, Dr. Taylor.
Very good, Matt. Have a good morning.
You too. We'll talk again.